A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Gordon dives, and yes, he made that catch. A tremendous catch that robbed Chicago of two runs by the Gold Glover Alex Gordon.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future. This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson. I'm joined by Michael Engel, who's all over my screen for some reason. Let's see if I can change that.
I'm all up in your business.
You're all up in my business. I don't know why it's not switching again, but this could be fun. Hopefully it's switching for everybody else now, as I'm controlling it and not just me. But if not, it is what it is. Maybe we'll just get an hour of Michael Engel. Because
it's the Michael Engel show.
It might be, because I've set it up on a separate computer for the recording. So we're all just participants this week. But anyways, if you're wondering what we're talking about, we of course do this live different times every week, it seems. Today it's Saturday, 2 p.m., 10/27, 2012. Like I said, this is Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson. We're live at youtube.com/RoyalManReport. And I'm joined by Michael Engel, as we said. And, of course, Jeff Herr is back with us this week. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well. Michael was apparently doing better until about 5 minutes ago. What's the score in that KU-Texas game, Mike?
It is 21-7, and there are 3 seconds left.
Oh, and Texas is winning, I take it?
Yeah, they just took the lead with about 12 seconds left. So
I thought KU was up 14-7 in that game at one point.
They were, and then they gave up a touchdown, and then they went on a really good drive. It was like a 7-minute drive, and they got a field goal out of it.
Oh, well, I thought you said it was 21-7. What was the score?
21-17.
I apologize.
Yeah, there's 3 seconds left. We'll see if anyway, it's KU football. You don't expect to win, but when you get the opportunity, you want to finish it off, and they did not do that. So.
You know, I get offered free tickets to these games, and this is one I absolutely passed on because I was like, there's just no way I'm going to go watch KU get stomped by Texas because I hate Texas so very, very much.
Oh, well.
But let's save all that for later. We've got a big show for you today. The live portion is not going to be that big, so if you are watching at YouTube at youtube.com/RoyalManReport, make sure you take the time to head on over to kingsofkaufman.com/podcast and download the latest episode, because we're going to have a couple of great interviews today with Ryan Verdugo and Jason Adam. I pre-recorded these earlier this week, and I love talking to Jason Adam and Ryan Verdugo. They are two of my absolute favorites, so... we'll talk a little bit about those interviews coming up. The guys have had a chance to listen to them, and we'll talk a little bit about those. We're also going to wrap up our final week of the Out of the Park experiment. I've actually started on the second experiment that I wanted to do because the first one didn't turn out too well for me. But head on over to ootpdevelopments.com before the World Series ends. So if the Giants sweep, then you don't have much longer. But head on over there and pick up the game for just $20 until the end of the World Series. Additionally, one more housekeeping note. November 18th, I believe it's a Sunday, we're going to try to do a Chiefs watch party / tweet up at Kelly's Westport Inn. So listen and watch your favorite Twitter accounts for upcoming information on that. And I think with that, we'll actually get started here. The Royals hired a new hitting coach, and I guess that's where we'll start today. I don't know that it's big news, because it definitely wasn't a big name. The biggest thing this guy has done, and Bob Fesco was having a lot of fun with this, but Jack Maloof wrote a book on hitting. And in his book, he talks about hitting home runs a lot, and you know that that was something that the Royals wanted. So, Mike, you and Jeff are definitely more of our stats and kind of baseball geeks. I'm more the fan and host, and that's how this show's always worked. So why don't you two take away what we're going to take away from Andre David and Kevin Maloof, or I think I said his name wrong, didn't I?
Jack Maloof.
Jack Maloof. taking over for Kevin Seitzer as hitting coach. Mike?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they've both been in the Royals organization for a while. Andre David was actually the Royals hitting coach from, I think it was May 2005 until May 2006, which is a great time to be a Royals fan as well. So, you know, they've both been kind of in the organization. Yeah, Maloof does have that book, and he's got a website about, I think it's just jackmaloof.com, and it's about hitting instruction. You know, they're not big names, but I think sometimes that's okay. I don't know in this case one way or the other. I can't really speak a lot to what they've done because it's hard to tell, you know, up and down an organization what they've all done. But their guys, Maloof especially, was a guy who walked a lot in the minor leagues. And, you know, you hope that will translate over. The problem with that is Kevin Seitzer walked a lot in the minor leagues and the major leagues, and it didn't really, you know, that message never got across. So maybe Maloof's a better instructor in that sense. I don't know. Sometimes the coaches, they don't make that big of a difference. I think Seitzer probably did help guys like Alex Gordon at least get a program that they could then take over. But I think a lot of that turnaround is Gordon's. But if you look at guys like Jeff Francoeur, who he gets some credit for his 2011 season, well, if he gets the credit for that, he has to get some of the blame for his poor 2012 as well. So, you know, it's always kind of this game of what you attribute to the coach. So is it a big move? I don't know. But I think it's interesting that they went with Maloof is the major league hitting coach, and then Andre David is going to be the assistant. So they're both going to be at the big league level, which is a difference from what they've done in the past. And that's kind of a trend in the big leagues now where you'll have more than one hitting coach. So it's also interesting to me, and I don't know if this has anything to do with it at all or not, but they're both left-handed hitters. And you look last year at the guys who struggled, the guys like Moustakas and Eric Hosmer, both left-handed hitters. So I'm curious if there's something with Seitzer where he wasn't able to maybe communicate the same things as well with those two last year. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. They did want to go towards more of a home run hitting approach. That's what they said in the postseason press conference, the idea of pulling the ball more. So, you know, that's kind of what they're seeing, and they're kind of installing these new guys, and that's probably going to be the lesson that they teach.
You know, first of all, I want to agree with your first point you made, where they're not huge names, and that's not necessarily a problem. No. I think usually when that's either not a problem or a good thing is when, you know, someone is not a someone's not a big name because they're not really known yet, but they're the team, you know, by hiring them, whoever that team may be kind of a little bit trying to be ahead of the curve at some point. And that just doesn't seem to be the case, though, unfortunately, in this situation.
Because for the Royals. Right now,
yeah, I mean, for me right now, I am – the Royals are guilty until proven innocent with any move that they make. Just because of the nature of their organization over the last 20 years and the moves that they've made. And when you look at Dayton Moore and what he's done, and to see when you have a chance like this to kind of do something different, maybe shake things up, and he makes an internal hire from the organization, similar to, you know, Rick Knapp's whatever happened with that whole scenario, and then bringing Bill Fisher back into the fold, and then promoting a guy, I can never remember that guy's name.
Stephen Foster.
Yeah, who's going to be the new minor league pitching coordinator. Yep. He was an internal guy as well. So, yep. You know, the biggest problem with Dayton Moore has been surrounding himself with all of his guys and his yes men, people that don't challenge him, that refuse to think outside the box. So seeing another situation where he has an opportunity to make things different, to make a better change, and he just does another internal hire of just one of his guys that are going to do whatever he wants to say, you know, it ultimately, it's just, it keeps just continues to pound that frustration of the Royals just refusing to think outside the box, and I can't – I can't get excited about it, and I don't think anybody's really excited about it either way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, it's just another thing of, you know, I don't want – you know, I'd rather the Royals did something a little bit different. And this whole idea of we want to hit more home runs, you know, walks and home runs now all of a sudden is their approach as opposed to apparently contact, which was more their approach the last few years, I guess. You know, even though they don't really make it clear, I guess, but they're trying to make it clear now. Home runs is what we want to do, and they want to focus a little bit more on walks, I think, just to get people on base. So when I hit a home run, it's a three-run homer instead of a solo homer, which, I mean, you know, no, I guess that's good logic. But to me, it just continues to strike the Royals of an organization that says, hey, you know what, we want to ascribe to a certain philosophy, and we want to force everyone to fit to that. Whoever we go out and get, whatever their skill set is, we can change them to do what we want to do. You know, Alex Gordon is the perfect example. The Royals have never played to his skill set until they finally, you know, last year and the majority of this year said, you know what, bat lead off, that's when you're doing the best. And then even then, he has this just ridiculous amounts of success, and they say, you know what, you're having success now. Now we're going to try and force you to, as that square peg that you've become, we're going to try and force you into this round hole as a number three hitter.
And now you're a run producer.
Yeah, you know, it's just, I want an organization to, you know, this is, to bring in a different example, look at, like, what Bill Self does with KU. I mean, the reason he is such a great coach, and I'm not trying to compare basketball to baseball at all. I'm simply from a philosophical standpoint. You look at yourself and you see him as somebody who, no matter who his players are, like, he has his system, but he makes tweaks and changes to that system to fit the personnel that he has. He doesn't say, hey, Jeff Withey, you have to be Cole Aldrich. You know, he doesn't say you have to be Thomas Robinson. He's going to say, Jeff Withey, you're going to do what you're going to do, and then we're going to change the offense to, you know, play to your strengths and cover up your weaknesses. Whereas the Royals aren't that organization. They say, we want to hit home runs. So, Alex Gordon, you need to start hitting home runs. I don't care if you bat 250 next year. You need to hit 25 home runs. You know, Billy Butler, yeah, you hit 313 and your on base was 365 or whatever it was. That's great. But, you know, let's hit – I want you to hit five more home runs and drop your batting average 30 points. You know, that's what's the most frustrating to me about this whole thing. The Royals wanting to hit more home runs and not trying to be the approach they're having with the hitting coach. So ultimately for me, I'm not excited about it. And quite frankly, I think it's just another way for the Royals to without being, you know, too negative, to screw something up.
Well, and Jack Maloof was in the Braves organization from 2002 to 2007 as well. So it's just more of the same. I mean, you're not bringing any new ideas in. You're bringing the same ones. You're just putting them in different spots. It's just really a weird approach. And there's no way you can say that what the Royals have done has worked aside from the draft. And we still haven't really seen that turn into what you want it to be, which are wins at the major league level. So, I don't know. We'll see. I'm open-minded to see what happens. But my expectations are pretty they're tempered, I'll say.
Well, and I think my big thing, and this is kind of off of what Jeff said, is it concerns me that they're so bent on home runs, because home runs in a way do lead to strikeouts. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they're going to be complaining about next year. And they had said this on 610. So while this is my original thought as well, it has already been said, and I don't want to take anything away from people in mass media that have said the same thing that I'm echoing, which is, you know, anytime you go for more home runs, it's going to lead to more strikeouts, because you're trying to hit the ball so much harder. Mm-hmm. You're not making contact anymore. You're trying to kill the ball. Quick question on
it's
the
like Will Myers did that too.
Yeah.
In Omaha, he struck out a lot more, but he also hit 37 homers.
Among but two if you want home run hitters, that guarantees that Will Myers is up next year, right?
And even with that, too, I mean, and I think, I guess, the ultimate hope is that, you know, even if – take someone like Adam Dunn, and he's an extreme example, but your ultimate hope is that if you're going to hit more home runs, that you actually do, first of all, but – If you're going to strike out more, that you walk more too. Because you look at Will Myers, he hit a ton of home runs last year for a minor leaguer. He struck out quite a bit. But the thing that nobody really talks about, you know, I know Rainey's hit on this on his website a lot, and you see people, some people talk about, but the general public doesn't really hear about, is that, you know, Will Myers walked last season alone twice as much as Mike Moustakas ever walked in any season in the minors last year. You know, and that was the last time I looked at it. So, I mean, it wasn't the end of the season, so it might have even been even more than that. But, you know, point is, he walked a real, real good amount, too. And so I guess if there's a bright side of me, I think there's that you maybe kind of make up for that less contact with hopefully being more selective and having a better approach at the plate. But based on the Royals over the last 20 years, I absolutely think that that's not going to happen, to be honest.
There's one more thing that I had sent you guys, but I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball, something that Bill Ivey pointed me to from I-70 Baseball. He pointed me to this at work the other day. We work together. If people don't know, it doesn't really matter. But there's 10 experts that put together the Fielding Bible Awards, and I was going to try to see – you guys probably know better than I do who's all involved in this, but I think it's – I know it's John DeJuan and Bill James, who we all missed a chance to listen to talk.
I completely forgot he was doing that. So
I didn't forget, and honestly, I was available to go, and I just got tied up with some things. But that's neither here nor there. Check out the Kansas City Baseball Historical Society for great events like that. It would have cost you, I think, $5 to get in, or a yearly membership of $25. You know, we love those guys. Without them, we would have never had the Kansas City Baseball Vault Radio Show. But anyways, those guys that do this award are very well respected in the industry. Mm-hmm. And the original one that I can't find now, but it showed runners up as well as winners. And players to note for the sake of this show is the third base winner was Adrian Beltre from Texas, but his runner up was Mike Moustakas.
Yep.
And in left field with no runner up whatsoever. In other words, nobody in left field compares to Alex Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah, he was – I think it was like 28 run save or whatever metric they used to measure it, and Gordon was at like 28, and the next closest guy had like 12. So it wasn't even close. And, you know, I think watching that makes sense. You look at what he's done the last 2 years. He's played as good a defense as I've seen on any Royals team since I've been watching. You know, and that includes, you know, Mark Redzolonik won a Gold Glove, and it includes, you know, even Alcides Escobar and such. I mean, he doesn't make a lot of errors. He has great range. The arm, I mean, speaks for itself. And he's just got fantastic instincts out there. I mean, you can't say enough about Alex Gordon's defense. I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all that he won that award. And a lot of time, it sets him up pretty well for another Gold Glove, I think.
And I think so too. I think he's probably going to win a second Gold Glove, and you know, Gold Gloves don't necessarily mean as much as they used to, especially now in the outfield since they've switched to giving one for each legitimate position. But to your point, though, I mean, a couple things about Alex Gordon switching. Number one being, I think it's awesome that it'll be fun that if and when I have kids someday, and Alex Gordon, you know, assuming he stays a Royal for the rest of his career, which is a good possibility at this point, you know, say he does that and goes down as one of the best Royals ever, you know, it'll be interesting to see someone's reaction when you say, oh yeah, Alex Gordon was a third baseman for his first 2 years and then became one of the best left fielders in Royals history or whatever. And then second thing, I can't think off the top of my head. I mean, when was the last time someone had like a position switch like this? And maybe it just seems like a bigger deal because Alex Gordon was supposed to be the next George Brett at third base, both offensively and defensively. But, I mean, when's the last time someone, not even just a Royal, had like a full-scale position switch like this, not, you know, left field to center field or something like that, and excelled as much as Gordon had? I mean, I can't think of
stuff like on my head, but it'd be like Craig Biggio or Robin Yount or guys like that. Where they're going from, like, Biggio's weird. I don't know if he won a Gold Glove or not, but he went from catcher to center field to second, and Yount went from short to center. So,
and Didn't Pujols come up as like a right fielder or something?
He was a third baseman when he was drafted.
Third baseman, yeah. So I mean, he wasn't a first baseman, and then he's won a couple of Gold Gloves there. But that's more based on his offensive production than his defense. Even though
he's
pretty
darn good at defense, but
he's a pretty good defensive third baseman.
I think if they didn't consider offense, Brendan Ryan would win the Gold Glove at shortstop every year. He has more range than I think anybody in all of baseball the last 5 years. He's ridiculous. So it's just weird. It's kind of a popularity contest, but it still counts a little bit. I don't think they're just handing things out. Like Beltre definitely deserves a Gold Glove. You know, I think Moustakas has a strong case too, but I think Beltre absolutely deserves it. If he wins it at third base, Gordon, I think, deserves it. You know, I think Brett Gardner deserved it last year too. And it just happens that all those guys have produced offensively too. But I think sometimes with like Derek Jeter, I think you kind of get the benefit because he's got that offense and it makes him more prominent as a player.
Yeah,
so.
Especially when you look at how well Alcides Escobar did last year. You know, I think he kind of took a small step back in 2012. Nothing huge, but he wasn't quite as sharp as he was, I think, in 2011. But, you know, I think when you look at, you know, him not winning in 2011, that's when it's like, eh. You know, maybe if he was batting 300 like he did this year, maybe he would have had a better shot. Who knows?
It's a defensive award, but, yeah, I think offense factors in.
I was going to say, you know, the thing about offense playing in for a defensive award is ridiculous, but Brendan Ryan did make that list on Fielding Bible as well. At shortstop, and my question to you guys is, what I was trying to say, and hopefully this is working, is if Alex Gordon has a bad year the way that that Frank Gore has, will the fan base come against him like they have against Frank Gore because he's so good defensively, or can his defense rise above that?
Well, I think it will help because it gives him another way to contribute. Part of the complaining against Frank Gore is, yeah, he was really bad at the plate, but he wasn't good in the field either. All he had was assists. And, you know, I wonder how many of those are balls that he might have been able to catch that he ended up not getting to and still got the out on the throw. There might have been two or three of those or something. I think it gives him a chance to contribute. But I think it's also kind of a reputation thing. You could see Alex Gordon rebounding. Jeff Francoeur, he's got this pattern where he'll have a good year and then he has three or four really bad ones. And then kind of something rejuvenates him, has a good, you know, 4 months, then he's bad again. And 2011, he was really good. 2012, he was really bad. And I think we're still going to see a really bad Jeff Francoeur, you know, in the field and at the plate. Gordon, I think he could regress a little bit. We've kind of been talking about this for 2 years where when he puts the ball in play, it goes for a hit, you know, more often than the stats say it should. And that can turn around any time where instead of it falling for a hit, you know, now it's getting caught or now it's in a position to be fielded. So, you know, you could see some regression there, but I think, you know, he's going to get on base enough to where it's not going to be a big deal if he doesn't, you know, get a lot of hits or as many hits, and then the defense is an improvement as well that, you know, kind of retains a lot of his value.
Okay, and so then the last thing we need to talk about today, which is definitely more negative as far as Royal stuff is concerned, is the Royal signed a pitcher. Everybody cheers, right? Yay! No.
Yay! Yeah.
It's because the Royals do what the Royals do, and I guess it was a good thing for me. I was too busy to really care yesterday, and I had to get off of Twitter before I went into full rage mode. But the Royals signed a pitcher from the Cubs off of waivers, and it's nobody that you're ever going to care about. And I'll just let Michael. We'll let Jeff Hur take it from there initially.
I mean, this guy. I don't know a ton about Chris Volstad, and I don't know. I mean, if there's a bright spot, it's something that I think you can look and say, and I even heard someone ask this to Robert Ford, and he answered in the affirmative, which he normally never does, but they asked, you know, does the signing of Volstad mean that there's a higher likelihood that they could cut ties with Hochever this offseason, and Robert Ford said yes. And usually on questions like those, Robert Ford doesn't give a typical straight answer. He kind of toes the company line, which is understandable. But and I think that looking at that, I mean, I think that's a possibility. I think that definitely is a situation where with a guy like that who, I mean, honestly, the sad part is this guy is more or less a nobody. And I mean, just an average major league pitcher, maybe slightly below even. Mm-hmm. And
he's still better than Hochever.
Yeah, he's got the second best ERA on our team right now from all the starters, you know. So, I mean, that's more of an indictment on Royals pitching than it is on this guy. But I think if it leads to cutting ties with Luke Hochever, then I'm all for it. Absolutely. You know, and if that's the case, then, you know, to me, I guess you could kind of see that as a good sign because it says, hey, maybe the Royals are starting to be a little bit quicker to pull that trigger because with Hochever, you know, he's been here for 4 years now, 5 years he's been in the majors. I'm not sure exactly, but, you know, since he was so young when he first started, I feel like they haven't really hung on to him quite as long as the Kyle Davies thing. So maybe they'll, you know, maybe with as pressure mounts to be good, they'll start pulling the trigger on these quicker and quicker. And if that's what this is kind of a sign of things to come, then I'll take that, even though I don't really know that I care that Volstead's a Royal now.
Yeah, he's not good, but he's younger than Hochever. He's going to cost less towards payroll than Hochever. His numbers look better than Luke Hochever. Doesn't mean he's any good. He's just not Luke Hochever. On its own, it's not terrible. It's
like Brady Quinn over Matt Castle. It's like Brady Quinn's not good either, but he's just not Matt Castle.
He's not Matt Castle, yeah. And it's like, okay, just on the surface, it's not an awful move. It's just not good, and it's not anything to be excited about.
And actually, if I may jump in, the worst part, it doesn't become awful until the Royals try and cram it down our throats like that was one of their moves of signing a big free agent.
Mm-hmm. That's where the rage comes from. Because right after they did this, some of Dayton Moore's comments, it's just more of the same stuff. You know, this is what he's told Bob Dutton. He said about Volstead, he's had a lot of ups and downs, but he's still very young. Our scouts have seen him, and his stuff is still good. Hopefully we can get him back on track. Okay, back on track to, you know, just under league average. That's what we're shooting for with this guy. You know, and then there's more about Dayton Moore and his approach this offseason, and they've kind of shifted away from this idea of going out and trying to sign guys to where now maybe we're going to try to do these reclamation projects. And you just can't do that. It's not going to work. You know, you can't keep taking guys and gambling on them just because you think you can turn them around. I mean, this is an organization. They've been touted as the best farm system in baseball. They've got guys from 2007 to 2008 draft, all these pitching guys, you know, Mike Montgomery and Danny Duffy and all these great guys. The only three guys who have made a start that have been drafted by Dayton Moore, I think, are Danny Duffy, Everett Tieford, and there's one more, and he made one start. That's it. I mean, that's all you get out of it. I think Dusty Hughes is the third one. So if those are all the pitchers that you can develop, how are you going to turn guys around? How are you going to break bad habits when you can't even develop somebody from scratch?
I was going to make that exact same point, Mike. It's befuddling how you can say you have absolutely no evidence to say that you've done anything good with developing or fostering good pitching, and yet here you are trying to say, we can make this guy better, we can make it work. What?
It's just not going to work. And, you know, I know it's going to be tough in free agency, but it almost sounds like Dayton Moore has given up. Like, he's already got his excuse lined up that they can't compete, and they can. You know, Anibal Sanchez is going to be about $60 million, and that's a lot. But over 4 years, if you get a guy who's he's 29 now, you know, he's a guy who can get you 200 innings, and he's going to be a number two level starter on most teams.
And you know what?
Perfectly fine.
And you know what? I don't want to hear this crap about the Royals can't afford it because they can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They can. You know, the Royals can go $80, $85 million in payroll.
Absolutely. And
they were at about 63 or 64 this year. Yeah. So, I mean, sign Anibal Sanchez and get you, you know, that's $15 million right there. And, you know, sign another pitcher that maybe is another reclamation project but not quite as big a one as, like, a Volstad. And, you know, make him a little bit cheaper. I mean, you can – they've got – you know, for players that could be elite, like Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Salvador Perez, my God, Alcides Escobar, those guys are dirt cheap. And they're all players that could be – next year could be top five at their position. So, I mean, the Royals are saving a lot of money right now on that. They need to put it somewhere. And they can't afford it. They just – it's whether or not they choose to.
Part of what they've talked about is they don't want to block prospects, and they gave us the same thing last year when, you know, Mark Burley was on the market and C.J. Wilson was out there, and, you know, Roy Oswalt, even though he, you know, sucked, yeah, he looked like a guy that the Royals could have, should have signed, and all these different players, and they said they didn't want to sign anybody because they didn't want to block the guys that they had coming up, and all that got was, you know, Jake Odorizzi for two starts in the last week and a half of September. That's who you blocked all year.
And Mike Montgomery going back down at Double-A.
Yeah, yeah. It's just – it's maddening. Dayton Moore is either too afraid to demand that they can spend the money, or he's just incompetent to know who to locate that they need to sign. And both of those are fireable offenses. And absolutely. I've been on his side for so long, and I just can't do it anymore. I can't defend what he does anymore because – he's completely incompetent in his job at this point. He can't put together a major league roster. He can't approach how to develop players. He doesn't open himself to new ideas or doing things differently when this team has been awful for 20 years. Something has to change, and they're not willing to change anything. It's disturbing.
I couldn't have said it better, Mike. And, I mean, you know, as an accountant, we did like a lot of in school – in accounting, we did a lot of you know, obviously case studies on different businesses and different things like that. And it's so weird, the dichotomy between, you know, people always say, oh, well, professional sports is a business, but it operates so differently than a true business does. But, you know, to try and make the best example possible, I mean, you know, look at the auto industry in America, you know, like Ford and Chrysler and all them. I mean, say Ford comes over and says, oh, well, we're going to go buy, well, they already own Aston Martin, but say they, you know, when they first bought them, they're like, oh, we're going to go buy Aston Martin and we're going to turn them into even better car company. It's like, well, Ford has sucked for the last 50 years as a car company. What makes you think that they could buy another car company and turn it into a good one? You know, it's the same kind of thinking that the Royals have. It's like they have not done anything. They just think that they can competently run an organization. Yet they keep trying to get us to believe that they're going to do things better than other organizations did, but they've been doing it worse for years and years and years. And their refusal to, just like you said, Mike, just to not think, it gets so maddening when they can't think outside the box. It just has to be this rigid, you know, this is the way that we've done it, and this is the way it's going to work, and it's just not. I mean, you know, talk about blocking pitchers and blocking prospects. Never, never, ever worry about that, ever. I mean, if you can get a quality player on
your
team,
that's a good problem to have.
Then do it. You know, don't ever worry about that because exactly, yeah. If you have seven pitchers who could be starters at the major league level, then thank God. I mean, who cares if two of them are blocked? Freaking trade them. That's what the Rangers did. Why do you think they made the World Series? They went out and they had so many starting pitchers. In 2011, they traded two legitimate prospects for a reliever just to help them make a run. I mean, if you are in that situation where you have – look at the Rays. I mean, they every year, every offseason –
there's a new rookie who comes in September and gives them five starts to help them in the playoff run.
And every year they talk in the offseason like, oh, who are the Rays going to trade? Is it going to be James Shield? Is it going to be Niemann? Is it going to be Cobb? Who are they going to trade? And – mean, they haven't really pulled the trigger a lot in the past couple of years, but ultimately those options are what makes things great. Sorry, Joe, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine. I actually interrupted you. I was just going to say on that note, look what the A's did. They traded everybody, it seemed. They seemed to be dead in the water, and all of a sudden they came back to life and won the hardest division in baseball behind the AL East and made the playoffs and just, it, I mean, blows your mind. I mean, Oakland, the Athletics are in the playoffs. The Orioles are in the playoffs.
Yeah, the A's were intentionally rebuilding. Like, they didn't expect to win, and they still won. It's ridiculous.
I literally...
Who remembers in May when this Tommy Malone guy comes up and just shuts down the Royals, and everyone's like, who the hell is this guy? And it's like, oh, well, that's who they got. And was that the Gio Gonzalez trade?
This is the Gio Gonzalez. Yeah, he was a natural.
They got the Gio Gonzalez trade, and it's like, oh, that's weird. And then all of a sudden, he comes out to be one of the best rookie pitchers in the American League. And it's like, yeah, they traded Trevor Cahill, they traded Gio Gonzalez, who are pitchers that they drafted and they developed, traded them for more prospects, and now they have even better pitchers, and they have more of them. I mean, it's insane. And that's them turning, you know, a quote-unquote problem. And they didn't even have a problem, because it's not like they had too many pitchers. They had just enough. But they turned that situation into something that was even better for them, and it's because Billy Bean is forward-thinking, and he thinks outside the box, and Dayton Moore doesn't do that. You know, he won't even trade a closer that he had for 5 years that on a losing team that now we're going to pay, theoretically, could pay $8 million to next year coming off his second Tommy John. I mean, it's things like that that make, and a track record of it, that make Dayton Moore's team so...
Yeah, one thing on its own, not that big a deal, but when it's every year, there's 5 to 10 examples. The best comment I saw on Twitter about this blocking prospects thing came from Jeff Parker. And he said, it's funny because the Royals didn't have any trouble blocking Will Myers all year.
That's a good point.
I'm going to say, it's just like, if you're going to say one thing, stick to it. You know, don't do this doublespeak. And it's just, it's really frustrating because it's my team. It's a team I've watched since I was 8 years old. I'm not going anywhere, but by God, they make it as difficult as possible to be a fan, and you know, it just sucks.
And what's disgusting is I feel bad for you guys that were born into Royals fandom because coming from Nebraska, I had a choice. This is how bad I am at life. I made the wrong choice. You know, I had a choice. I could have chose the Braves because they were on TBS. I could have chose the Cubs because they were on WGN. I could have chose the Cardinals because they were considered one of the home teams. And I chose the Royals. And so, you know, we're here, we're stuck with it, and I want to move on because we're already almost a half hour in or so, and Jeff wanted to do,
show.
Yeah, and I've got 40 minutes worth of interviews, and I really don't want this to be a 2 hour show, and we've got a whole other segment yet, but we can talk about this more next week because we're going to effort next week to have Mike get us a gentleman from the Twins for FanSided because he wrote a great article about who the Twins need to look at for pitching. They're in the same boat we are. And then Mike, also a little programming, live planning here for you folks. Try to get a hold of one of the fan-sided guys for the Orioles. I want to talk, or not the Orioles, for the A's. I want to talk about last year with them and and get kind of the opinion from inside the velvet rope of the Oakland Athletics. And especially with San Francisco being in the playoffs and everything. I mean, just the Bay Area having such a huge, huge year this year.
And that just I think there'll be a good thing I wanted to bring up today, but we're not going to have time, so we can do it next week. But there was a tweet I had that I favorited that I was going to tweet out. But it's talking about no matter who wins this World Series, Moneyball loses, and they talk about how it's because like neither of the teams like walk or you know, I mean not quite that, but it seems to be like a people just kind of continually misunderstanding the whole Moneyball thing. But anyway, it's something that we can talk about next week, but that'll be something to look forward to and an interesting topic of still how that Moneyball debate rages, even though it's still completely misunderstood, even though it shouldn't be 10 years after
the fact. It's represented completely all the time, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's for next week, folks, so...
But, you know, the thing is, and I want to do a couple of things real quick here before we go to break. Then we're going to come back. do our Out of the Park baseball segment, outoftheparkdevelopments.com. But I did want to say that we're going to – you kind of got an idea of what we're going to do for the next couple weeks. We do have – we will at some point do a show with Jason Parks this offseason. I swear to you on that. We're just trying to time it for a week when we don't have a lot going on. But if the Royals continue to make some of these idiotic moves, we're gonna have plenty to talk about. But we will have Jason Parks at some point. And just on one last note on this, I read that when I was calling Volleyball Live for Park University, and I had to close it. I had to close the article because the quotes from Dayton Moore just make you want to punch somebody, and it's hard to stay focused on what you're doing. And I'm getting paid by Park University to call their volleyball games, and they deserve 100% of my attention. Really, not, yeah.
You don't really need expletives going out. Bump set.
Well, and the funny thing is, a little off topic, and then we'll go to break, but I found out yesterday when I was interviewing the coach before the game, I found out they go back and watch the videos that I do, and they listen to what I say, because he was actually laughing about me saying about how he was going on a tirade or something with one of the referees. So I didn't realize they went back and watched them. I just kind of do my own thing and didn't really care, you know, but I guess I got to pay a little better attention because it's not just the families that are watching, it's the actual team. On that note, let's go to break. We'll come back, talk about Out of the Park Baseball. We'll be right back on the other side.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned. And the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
And if you're watching live, welcome into the Michael Ingles Show. Something's screwy with my recording computer and I can't reach it from here, so it's all Michael Ingles all the time. The rest
it's
of us.
Not, it's not mine. It switches on mine.
Does it? Okay, so maybe maybe everything's just screwy on my end. So if it's switching now, then that's perfect. Otherwise, it was just the Michael Ingles Show. But of course, the gentleman you just heard from was Jeff Herr. I don't think we actually said anything to Jeff in the beginning because we got to talking about Mike up on the screen. But you know, guys, we've had a little bit of fun this last month. We entered into a deal with Out of the Park Baseball, which provided us a couple of their games that are normally $40 a piece. If you get them before the Giants win the World Series, then you can get it for $20. I shouldn't say that because the way the playoffs have went this year with the Cardinals having their huge comeback,
yeah, you can't count anybody out.
And then blowing it the way the Rangers did and blowing it to the Giants. And now the Giants have won like six straight elimination games. So who knows, maybe the Tigers fire back and we have a real long World Series, but part of what we did was we were going to see if we could save the Royals. And I don't know if the programming in the game, because the Royals have been bad for so long, kind of plays into that. But I never could get the team to the playoffs. Mike did it the first season. Mm-hmm. I was able to get some right around 500 teams. But I even went out the last season and just – I had sold off a bunch of pieces and then signed a whole bunch of pitching, thought I finally had the team, and it didn't pan out. How did you guys end up doing? And that mine was through like 2015, 2016. How'd you end up doing on yours?
I got through 2014. I finished that season the other day, and the last season was really bad. I finished like 64 and 98 something. It was just really terrible. I think the team went about 7-20 in May, and then went about 4-22 in July. Like, it was just I go day by day, you can advance it to the next day. And I would just look, and so, another loss, another loss, another loss. I think they went on two or three different eight-game losing streaks. And, you know, this is a team I had Jeremy Guthrie, I had Cole Hamels, I had Anibal Sanchez. You know, Danny Duffy was pitching really well. Chris Medlin was one of the starters that I had. And it just, it was one of those things where on a day where the the offense would score six runs, they'd give up seven. And on the other, the flip side, you know, even if they only give up two runs, you know, the offense scores zero. So I'm at the point where it's just been rough. Our top prospect in the system is DeAndre Toney, who in real life was traded to the Astros as part of the Quintero trade. But I called him up in September of 2014, and he hit five homers in September, which was cool.
Let's hope that's not reality.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Declined Billy Butler's option at the end of 2014 because he was hitting from the three seasons that I played, he hit about a total of 260 and like 35 homers. So just completely not the Billy Butler I've grown.
That's the future right there. 35 home runs, 260. I bet you money that that is the future of Billy
Butler.
That's
three seasons. That's combined.
Oh, yeah, I think
he's
going to
take his option.
Because I think he's going to hit a few more home runs.
Yeah, it would have been $13 million for that. I think he's going to do better in real life.
I think the 260 isn't too far off, though. 260, 275, 30, 35 home runs.
Not for Butler. Not Butler.
I think if they change these guys and have them hit home runs, man, I think it's going to screw them.
They did that this year, though, and look at what Butler did. Now, others, that's a different story. Gordon, yeah, could easily see him being 260 and 25 homers. But anyway, Eric Hosmer has been playing well. He's been an all-star all three seasons I played as the GM. And Mike Moustakas was second in the league in RBIs. So, oh, and Jeremy Guthrie won a gold glove, or a great glove, as
right.
they call it. Yeah, but that's about it. David Glass did pass away in mine.
Did Josh Glass take over for you, too?
No, his son Jack Glass actually did. I had to fire Ned Yost, so I actually hired Ruben Amaro as the manager.
I had Clint Hurdle at mine on the end.
And then my scouting director, Lonnie Goldberg, left, so I hired Jeff Lunau for that, which is pretty cool. I like that. That was pretty neat.
Considering he's the GM now.
Yeah, Jay Bell is my hitting coach now. Yeah, I mean, just a lot of different changes. I've got to go in and hire all my minor league guys now, too.
I actually wouldn't mind that in real life if Jay Bell was the hitting coach.
I like Jay Bell. Jay Bell is one of my, like, three favorite shortstops of all time in the Royals organization. And he played, like, a season and a half. So what's that say?
There you go. Well, you know, some of the best managers aren't good players. I mean, Tony Roessa and Joe Torre were okay baseball players, but they've put together quite the careers of managers and baseball professionals.
Well, that's across all sports, I think. I've always had a theory on that where, I mean, what do they say? Those who can't do, teach, right? But every great football coach, basketball, I mean, Bill Self was an okay player. You know, you look at like Bill Belichick, I don't even know if he played in the NFL.
I don't think
Marty
did.
Schottenheimer was not a great NFL player. I mean, occasionally you get someone like a Mike Ditka, who's a Hall of Famer as a player and a coach. But yeah, typically those players that are just kind of average or worse are the ones that make the better coaches.
They learn enough themselves on how to get to that point, and then they can later communicate it. Whereas, how is King Griffey Jr. going to teach somebody how to hit like King Griffey Jr.? Oh, you just swing.
Yeah, it's why Michael Jordan's never going to make a good coach.
Oh yeah. How do you make all those shots? Oh, I just make them. Oh.
I don't know.
Thanks. Cool. How'd you make that throw, Brett Favre? I don't know. I just threw it. That's what it is. I mean, and that kind of goes back to our hitting coach discussion. You know, those guys weren't ever very good, so maybe they can teach something. Charlie Lau was not a very good player or a good hitter at the big league level, but he was able to teach some good hitters. So, you know, we'll see. But anyway. How did your season go, Jeff?
I got to be honest. I've been busy lately. We're trying to get a house ready to sell. So I'm still in my first season, but it's not great. It's not great. I'm 27-39 right now. So I'm actually doing a better job of being the Royals than the Royals are. So if that tells you anything. I'm 8.5 games back. Eric Hosmer is killing it. 323, 8 home runs, 43 RBIs. Alcides Escobar is actually having a season – basically like he actually had. He's hitting like 292 with no home runs, or, you know, maybe one or two home runs and stuff. So Mike Montgomery, 4.5 ERA, which isn't terrible but isn't great, but leads my team in wins, and 83 strikeouts through 66 games. So this game seems to really like Mike Montgomery because I'm pretty sure he had some success in your guys'
He did, until he got injured his shoulder and had to retire.
and literally when I fired this back up and started doing it, and Danny Duffy just had an injury, and I'm waiting on the prognosis, which means Tommy John, so he's probably gone for the rest of the year. So my IR is pretty bad right now, or DL, I should say. But I'm going to hopefully things will slow down for me. I'll get some more time to put into this game because I do enjoy playing it, even though I'll start cursing at my computer and my girlfriend will be like, what's going on? I'm like, stupid Royals. She's like, I thought the season was over. Like, no, I'm out of park baseball now. So.
Yeah, she's probably really fond of me right about this minute. I got you into this podcast and I got you this game and she's got to about hate me, I suppose. You know, the cool thing about this game, and I was a little tentative with doing it this way because I hate to do a show where we are so where we're so tied to marketable elements and what have you. But again, we want to be able to produce a show for you the way we want it, and this has allowed us a little bit to talk about things in a different way. And some of the feedback I've got has been real positive. I know Jeff Parker, as you mentioned, he's a listener and a friend of the program and now a writer for KOK. He mentioned, you know, he got a good kick out of this segment as a whole, but a whole big kick out of Josh Glass taking over from my team. I can only imagine what he's going to think when he finds out that Jack Glass, the other unknown son, has a team now too. So
I want this backstory too. I want to know if, like, it's a rainy night and there's a knock at the glass door and you know, this long lost son is standing there dripping wet and there's thunder and lightning. And
the glass family door is what you're saying. It's not actually
right,
a door
right.
made of glass.
I hope it's made out of glass. But they open it and the butler, and you know David Glass had a butler. You know it.
Of course. He's probably got one in his press box.
Right, and is standing there aghast at Jack Glass returning for what is his.
Well, him and his twin brother, Josh. I mean, he had abandoned these twins somewhere, and they're back. But, you know, and we do.
I'd be worried about Dan Glass.
Yeah, there you go. Because, no, I bet.
He's in a ditch somewhere in this situation.
It's like it's like the Hunts with the Chiefs. Clark is not the oldest Hunt. There's, I can't remember what the name. He might actually be Lamar Hunt Jr. is older. And occasionally he'll have some video or something on the Jumbotron, and I'll show it up there, or they'll show it up there at the Chiefs games. And I lean over to my dad, and I make some comment calling him the Fredo of the Hunt family because he got passed over for the ownership of the Chiefs, and it went to Clark instead of the oldest. Because I think he didn't go to like as prestigious of a school as Clark and all that kind of stuff.
That's funny.
I poke fun like
that's
not
how I wanted it. I'm smart.
Yeah, apparently there's got to be some reason for it, but who knows? But I do want to thank everybody that does give us feedback on the show. I try to mention everybody. I know that a lot of people are unhappy that we went away from the live show at the chat room, and he ain't really, and Dave Darby and Heather. I don't know what she's changed her handle to lately. I think it's little Duff's mom or something, and whatever it happens to be, you know, Heather, she's been a great friend of the program. You know, they missed the live show but some people have embraced the YouTube. And I know a friend of ours from Vancouver, Washington, who's watching right now, a KC Royals fanatic. He's always been real good about giving us feedback. David Lowe, who's a big fan of this show and the Pine Tar Press show, has always given us good feedback and helped us to guide the show. And we really do listen, guys. So if you got something that's going on, you know, royalmanreport@gmail.com, we'll read your emails on the air. We truly do take everything you guys say to heart and we go with it from there. So if you like this segment and it's something you want us to continue after this week, let us know, because otherwise our agreement with Out of the Park is over. But I think it was a good segment. I really do. Of course, it had a marketing deal behind it, but it was fun, and it was something different. And I have started a Royals franchise now in 1969. This is another option you can do. You can go back in time and relive history. Greg, another good friend of the program, his handle is GROGG. He loves to make fake leagues, and he says that's where the most fun is. Just create your own league and run with it there. And I haven't had time to do that yet.
Yeah, and his point to all that is because with fake names and fake teams, you don't have that that instilled level of attachment. Like, for me, Mike Montgomery, I want him to succeed and out of the park because he so far hasn't in real life. But if you take that out of the equation, then it's legitimately just trying to put the best players so you don't have – so there is some legitimacy to having a completely fictional league.
And, yeah, so that's really neat. And in 1969, I did get through my first season. I'm working on my second right now. It's hard. I'll tell you, if you go back and do some of the historical leagues when there was only two teams making the playoffs from each league, that is some hard baseball. In my 1969, I made a lot of trades, and it's easy because you know who's going to be good. So I used some players that were projected to maybe be good but didn't turn out, and I traded for, like, Willie Stargell, who was the team MVP. And he's still the continual all-star, the one all-star for the Royals, mind you. Royals still only get one all-star, even in 1969. And we went to the playoffs, lost to the 108-win Baltimore Orioles. We went on to the World Series to get beat by the 100-win Cubs. They got beat 4-2 in the World Series, Cubs winning it all. Royals got dumped 3-2 in the playoffs. So I'm in 1970, and we're 516 games out of first place, I think, behind the Tigers. At 500, so
crazy.
It's gonna be a rough run, and my owner is hot. Who is not Kaufman, by the way. It's somebody altogether different, and he's really hot because we were supposed to make the playoffs again this year, and we're not going to. So, but it's fun. You know, go out, check it out. What I want to do here is for those that are listening to the podcast. This went, of course, famous last words, short show. Way too long. It just ended up being a good day of talk, and that's what we do around here. And if you listen to the show, you must like listening to us talk, because that's what you get. So we're going to go ahead and end the show here. I know I promised you interviews. What I will do, instead of hanging on to those like I had planned for a day when we didn't have much to talk about, I will go ahead and try to run a show. I'll coordinate with Mike. We'll try to post a show on Kings of Kaufman about midweek. For those of you listening live, we will go ahead and talk about the interviews here on this feed, and you won't see the interviews because I don't have a way to feed them in. So, for Michael Engel and Jeff Burr, I'm Troy Olson, and this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Everybody have a great week. Be good to each other, and go Royals.